All right. I thought that would be pretty fun. Start off to the show anyway. This is Doc Mike. We are live on Real Liberty Media. Thanks, Scribner, for everything you did for us and for keeping this thing going. Vinny, good job keeping this thing going, too. We're getting there. A little bit at a time. Man, I have a ton of stuff to talk about today, of course. So, let's get to it. A couple things first. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left, if you know what I mean. And could y'all please just post a little something on any social media you are, tell your friends that we're live, and let's get them here. Get them in the chat room. Get them listening to the show. And let's move on, man. Anniversaries. You know what this is? The 30th anniversary of Hurricane Andrew. Now, you talk about a kind of a survival situation. And of course, the reason I'm talking about that a little bit today is because I actually lived through the eye of Hurricane Andrew in Homestead, Florida. It was kind of a shock. We were pretty prepared. Like I said, I've always kind of been a survivalist. Ever since I left home, it was just one thing that I was like, I'm always going to be prepared for whatever happens. I'm going to be prepared. So I had moved to Homestead, Florida, which is kind of down there, Miami, you know, Kendall Ridge, I don't know what else is there. I wasn't there very long, for crying out loud. I think I moved down there in February or March, and the damn hurricane came in August. And that was the end of my stay in Florida. But just to give you an idea, I'm not going to go into great detail about, I think I have before, as a matter of fact, but because this show is falling directly on the anniversary, I thought I would talk about it a little bit. So Hurricane Andrew was a gigantic hurricane, and it did cause a ton of damage, but really not a lot of lives were lost in Hurricane Andrew. But being from the Pacific Northwest, I had no idea what a hurricane was like. But just hearing the weathermen talk about it, the days leading up to it had me, you know, well, one, sort of terrified, and two, in full-on survival mode. And of course, Friday night, I remember the news closed with, hey, enjoy your weekend. This hurricane isn't going to hit over the weekend, so you know we'll be following it for you, and you just keep, you know, we'll just follow our updates, and we'll let you know if anything's going to happen. That was Friday night. Saturday morning, you know, wake up, turn on the news, and they're just like full on. You got to get prepared. This hurricane is coming right for us. And I forget that guy's name. He was. Randy Cross. I think it's Randy Cross. And he was doing full-on, you know, hurricane coverage the whole time. And I actually read something about him in the last day, too, that he actually had a line installed from, I don't know, from wherever directly to the antenna, the broadcasting, so that it wouldn't be interrupted by the hurricane, and he only did that a couple days before that hurricane hit. But anyway, yeah, they were full on, like, you better get prepared, this thing's headed right for us, and it's changed direction, it's moving, you know, directly toward Miami. So we were like, oh, okay, well, we got to go get some plywood and board up this house. We were renting a house. Luckily, it was a cinder block house. Well, kind of. Luckily, it was a cinder block house because, hang on. Because putting plywood over your windows on a cinder block house, you have to have masonry bits, and you better have more than one. And you have to drill into those, you know, concrete blocks, and put some anchors in, and then put your plywood on. Anyway, so we spent all day Saturday doing that. Well, I was doing that. My wife was, putting food together, survival kits together, kind of preparing the inside of the house. We moved all the furniture kind of in a more centric location in the house. As a matter of fact, we put a ton of furniture right in the central hallway. Well, the entrance to the central hallway, as a protective barrier. And there was a closet in that hallway, and that closet is actually where we spent the entire passing of the hurricane. But anyway, all day Saturday we did that, and all day Sunday, we finished up whatever we could, made some last minute, adjustments, like anything that we could do at the last minute, because we were exhausted, and it was like midnight on Sunday. And we went to bed, and literally like an hour later, the hurricane hit, and it just, went from zero to I don't know what in no time, and the winds just kept increasing and kept increasing and kept increasing, and the noise just kept getting louder and louder. And for a while, we were just sitting in that central hallway because it had the most, you're in the center of the house, like the very center of the house. So you had the most protection around you. And we sat there until what we determined later was a roof from a house about a block and a half away had lifted off and blew straight to our house and through our sliding glass door, which had two sheets of 5/8-inch plywood on them, because that's all that was available at the time. And it just shattered that plywood. It just blew that whole end of the house open. And once that happened, we got in that central closet. It had bifold doors on it. And we pulled the doors closed, and we just held them closed. And we had set the closet up to actually be the survival shelter for who knows how long. And, we had a transistor radio in there, and we had a flashlight, and we had two cats at the time. They were in there in cat carriers, and just two little tiny places to sit, and a bunch of survival stuff around us. Anyway. It was a hellacious night, because that hurricane went from, I don't know, whatever time it was, like 1:20 in the morning for us, till, I don't think we could actually come out of the house. It was after daybreak by a while, so it was probably 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning before the winds died down enough. And we did hear we did hear everything fall off, and we were listening to the transistor radio, so we were kind of tracking it. This was back in 92. And, you didn't have internet, and you didn't have internet. You didn't have cell phones. You didn't have any of that stuff. So, you were listening to the radio, trying to track everything the best you could. And, you're listening to literal hell break loose outside of your home, and a lot of things go through your mind, man, when you're just sitting there holding on for dear life, literally ready to react to whatever happens so that you will survive, but knowing at any minute nature could just erase you from the face of the earth, like in a split second, and you wouldn't be able to do anything about it. But, be prepared for whatever you can do. And that's what we were doing. So when we came out of the hurricane and exited the house for the first time, what you're doing initially is just assessing damage. Like, okay, neither one of us are hurt. Let's go see what we have to work with, So as we came out of the closet, we noticed there is shattered freaking glass everywhere. So no walking around barefoot, and have to be careful walking around with shoes, because there's literally glass shattered everywhere. And then you get outside, and my memory of what I saw was it looked like a gigantic lawnmower just came through and leveled everything at rooftop level for as far as you could see. So any big, beautiful trees that were in the area, they were trimmed off at roof level. Like, there had to have been so much, like, debris flying through with this hurricane. It just cut everything off. It was like everything was gone. There were a lot of structures that survived, which that was awesome. But, you know, and then you kind of start looking for neighbors and, you know, finding out what the need is around the neighborhood. And we were shocked that nobody in the neighborhood needed any kind of medical attention. That was truly amazing. We thought there was going to be thousands of dead bodies literally everywhere. And it turns out Hurricane Andrew had a very low death count for Miami, the Miami area. But, yeah, so kind of once you figure out that everybody, as far as you can reach them, because I'm telling you, there's debris everywhere. And you didn't want to really go too far from your home. Like, you couldn't drive because there was so much debris everywhere. Like, trees in the street, power lines, power poles down, cars turned over, roofs and, you know, lumber in the way. And you couldn't really travel. I mean, there was not going to be any driving around. I mean, that was obvious. It's one of the first assessments you could make is, you know, we're not driving anywhere, so we're not driving to get help, and we're not driving to get anybody to help. We're stuck here like this, and we don't know how long that's going to be. But then you start assessing, okay, what are we going to do now? Like, we're done with the hurricane. We need to figure out a way to live, and we don't know for how long. So, you know, all of the prep work we did of putting, you know, supplies in strategic areas so that we could access them and use them, like we put stuff in the cars that, you know, we would be able to, even if the car was turned over, even if the car was destroyed, we would still be able to open the trunk, open the doors, grab, you know, canned foods or whatever supplies we had put in there, we would still be able to access it. And we kind of thought that being in the car would be a good idea. We had two little cars at the time, too. And then all the stuff that we had in the closet with us, that was really, you know, extreme survival stuff. Not, you know, that was for to get through the night kind of stuff. And then we're like, okay, we're not going to sleep in that house, that's for sure. Because number one, it's like humid as hell in Miami and Kendall Ridge and Homestead, that area. I mean, it's humid. And it's August, and it's going to be hot and sticky and muggy and horrible. And there was no power, and there wasn't going to be power for, as far as we could tell, months probably. And I know there was a lot of people, and I'm sure this would be true today. In fact, you probably can see it today in some of these natural disasters and people reacting. But, I mean, when you're there on the ground in the middle of it, it's very different than when, you know, the reporters start showing up and the news crews start showing up and all that stuff. I mean, the initial response, there were people asking us, like, well, when is help going to come? And we would just look at them like, help's not coming. I mean, look around you. We're kind of in the center of a gigantic, devastated area. There's not going to be any help. You know, we have to figure this out ourselves, because nobody is coming to rescue us. And, yeah, there was a lot of there was a lot of news choppers going over, and it was kind of funny. People were trying to wave them down, and I was just like, man, you know, I get it, but you need to start thinking about, like, what are you going to do tonight? And so we put our, you know, we kind of started building our outside home, you know, our little shelter. Well, we didn't even have a shelter. Well, we sort of had a shelter, but it was mainly to keep stuff dry. Not us. But keep, like, bedding dry. We had a couple of sleeping bags. We had a ton of canned food, you know, any food that was in storage, and especially food that was in the refrigerator. It was like, okay, we got to cook and eat this food, you know. So a couple of the neighbors and us, we kind of assessed what we had and how long it would last. And we're like, okay, well, we got a grill, you know, we can cook a certain amount of food. Everybody's going to eat, and, you know, we're only going to give this food like a day, because there's not going to be any refrigeration. There's no power. This food is going to rot. So we need to, you know, just eat it, you know, and kind of like don't care about calories or health or whatever, because you really have no idea if and when food was going to, you know, when your next opportunity to get food was going to be. It was literally looked like a war zone, you know, just been blown to smithereens. So the first day we kind of assessed with the neighbors what the needs were and who had stuff that they wanted to cook or whatever. You know, there were so many people that just were totally unprepared. And part of that was the culture in Florida. People get into this false sense of security that mostly hurricanes don't hit them. In fact, the neighbors across the street, when we started boarding up, they were like, hey, what are you guys doing? We're like, well, we're boarding up. They say this hurricane's coming, and they're just like, ah, don't worry about it. They say that all the time, and these things never hit us. And those guys had a rough go, because they lost their roof partway through the hurricane, and they were just huddled in their house with no roof. And I just can't even imagine. They were elderly, too, and they survived just fine. But that was really crazy that you know, some people just get in the habit of, like, just not preparing at all. Well, anyway, so that evening seemed like we had a nice cookout, and everybody kind of calmed down as far as the neighbors. Like, nobody was really crazy, but it was kind of like, okay, we're all gonna settle in, you know, and kind of get used to this being the new norm for a while. And you know, and then all the food that you had that was canned or dry, you had to figure out how long that was going to last and when you were going to eat that and how much and you were going to eat and stuff. And it was literally days, like, that you would just see the news helicopters flying around, taking photos, and not everybody, but a lot of people would be trying to flag them down, like they're going to come down and help. And we just knew, yeah, no, they're not. And we don't even know when people are going to get here. But don't depend on it, man. You know, that's what I hope that a message I try and pass on is, don't let your survival depend on somebody else. Because that somebody else may put you at the bottom of their priority list. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you have to be the one who takes responsibility for making sure you survive whatever it is. So, yeah, I think the first couple days weren't too bad, because we had food that needed to be eaten, like eggs, you know, could go a couple days, and we had eggs and bacon and, you know, stuff that was pretty decent. And then in the evening we would have burgers or, you know, whatever else we had. But, I mean, pretty quickly the fresh food was gone, and you had to start looking at all the canned food. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, every day we kind of tried to figure out if there was a way out. like we would walk a couple blocks and, you know, kind of assess the situation and see if people were moving. But there were no cars moving at all. And I think about 3 days in, it seemed like a long time. It was either 3 or 5 days in, the National Guard started flying over. And they were flying low. And they were looking for any kind of, like, bad behavior. So, which kind of made you feel a little more secure, but, you know, like I say, we didn't leave our survival and our defense and our protection up to anybody else. But knowing that they were having the National Guard patrolling the skies and kind of taking a close look at, you know, the devastation, like the news choppers always stayed really high. You know how they are, those big aerial views. Helicopters, National Guard, they came in pretty low, man, and they were like almost so that they could see your face and identify who you were. And there was some talk about looting and crap, you know, the same stuff that always happens in those cases, you know, natural disasters, and when the store's not protected by anybody, people just walk in and take stuff. And you know, there was some crime being reported, and you know, our little block was like, hey, we're going to take care of business, so hopefully nobody wants to come here and start any trouble, or there will be some more deaths attributed to Hurricane Andrew. But it was actually pretty calm and calming to have the National Guard flying overhead. And then eventually, I think some of the four-wheel drive rigs made a path from where we were to where there was a shopping mall, not a mall, more like a strip mall with a grocery store and such in it. And they were actually handing out water and ice. And so we had one vehicle that would drive, but here's the deal, man. Like, you kind of even didn't even want to drive your car once you could, because there was so much debris, you almost guaranteed of getting a flat tire, and then where in the hell are you going to get that fixed? I mean, some people carry kits with them to fix their tires, but remember, no power. And then we started hearing those rumors like, you know, it's going to be months before we get power restored to the Homestead area or Kendall Ridge where I was. And one kind of fortunate thing is my wife and I had purchased tickets to come to Portland 3 weeks after Hurricane Andrew. Now, we had purchased the tickets early, like a couple months ahead of time. And it was really fortunate that we had those tickets. Now, we had no idea, you know, as the days went on, if we were going to actually get to the airport on the day we were supposed to leave. And I'll get back to that in a minute, because I wanted to talk about some. I was just thinking about how bad we would smell going to the airport. But fortunately, there was a water pipe. We had an outdoor shower because there was an in-ground pool in this house we were renting. And there was an outdoor shower that had actually been snapped off, but the water coming out of that was clean water. Well, after a few days, it was clean. We didn't trust it at first, so we boiled water at first, but as far as washing yourself down and stuff, you know, you could use it and a little soap or whatever to wash down and rinse off. I mean, hell, Miami's so toasty warm that it wasn't like you were going to freeze to death or anything. And, you know, yeah, it was just outside. You know, there's no protection. All the fences are down, and nobody gave a crap. It's like, we got water, and we're going to use it, and I don't care if you see me naked or not. I'm going to stay clean. Anyway, so we had these tickets to go to come back to Portland. And so So as the days went on, things kept getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And somebody from the block would say, hey, we're going to take a trip up to the supply depot and get some ice and some water. And I mean, the line was kind of long, but you know, yeah, that's what happened. You know, there's a huge demand for supplies and there's not a huge supply of supplies. So you stand in line and you get what you get, man. And God, people bitched and complained and I was just like, man, I don't know. Never understand that mindset that somebody else is going to save you when something like that happens, because that's just not the case. But it was nice to get some ice maybe every other day, and still there wasn't any stores open or nothing like that. And then, I know, that's what it was. The National Guard actually started patrolling the streets. So this was about a weekend, maybe 5 to 7 days in. It was probably 7 days in, because it was after they showed up overhead. And I think probably what they were doing is overhead, they were mapping out a route to how they would get to all these places. And then they started, you know, making a path. So they bring in these big Humvees and these big personnel transport. And they wouldn't really stop. Like, it wasn't like, hang on. It wasn't like they were going to stop and chat with you. If people had a problem, they would just tell them as they were passing. And then they might stop and assess some situation or whatever. But pretty much they were just patrolling. And yeah, they were all heavily armed. It's fine with me. I like guns. But, yeah, and then so once those guys started making paths, it was kind of like, okay, now you can start, you know, heading out maybe once every other day or so and get some supplies and see what's going on at the drop areas. And anyway, it was kind of just a bizarre situation, but it was truly one of those tests of how are you going to survive this moment? Like, as the hurricane hit, it was like, how do we react to each thing that happens as it comes at us? And then after the hurricane's done, is how do we get through, you know, whatever time period you wanted to select, like, how are we going to survive this afternoon? It's going to be 84 degrees, 100% humidity, thunderstorms. You know, what are we going to do? You have to be in a little bit of shelter to protect yourself from the thunderstorms. And you don't want to get, you don't want to have your bedding rained on, because in Miami, you're not going to hang it out to dry because the humidity is like 100%. So it's never going to dry. You know, and just like constantly assessing, what are you going to do next? What phase are you faced with surviving next? And it was really, I'll tell you, it was never really uncomfortable for us, because we both had camped our entire lives. We had both, you know, hunted and hiked our entire lives. We both had all of the stuff and skills we needed to survive however long it took. So it sucked not having your house and your air conditioning, and the pool was full of God knows what. So it's not like you're going in the pool because it's filthy and I'm sure contaminated. So you're just like, make the best of it. It's like, okay, we're going to be camping here for a while. An unexpected camping adventure for, I think we were there, we were there 3 weeks. And we were really happy that when the day came, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to see if we can get to the airport today. And I think we left the minute we could leave. Oh, I got to tell you guys another really amazing thing that happened. So 5 weeks before Hurricane Andrew hit is the first time in my life I ever bought renter's insurance. Like, you cannot imagine how fortunate that was that I took out a renter's policy literally 5 weeks before we basically lost everything. So that was pretty amazing. Plus, the company USAA, because it was in the service, that's the company I used, and they just took care of us, like, unbelievably. We never went back to Miami. When we left for Portland, they were just like, just tell us what you want, you know, what you want taken. And we told them, there's nothing left. Like, there's nothing really to move. We have these two cars. Man, I can't remember if we took a car to the airport. No, I don't think we did. I think we had a, we had some, we had the airport shuttle pick us up at the kind of the drop area. We had to get to the drop area. But yeah, we told USAA where the cars were, and you know, they had all the information, like owner information and stuff, and we said basically those two cars are the only thing that's that survived and the stuff that's in them. So we went off to Portland, and man, I'll tell you, that was crazy too, because we came, this is like coming out of the woods, you know, after having been, you know, hibernating for months, and you come out of the woods and you get in a fancy motorized vehicle and go to the airport, and there's these bajillions of people at the airport that, you know, they're just passing through. They have no idea what you've been through. And, you know, we were just so glad to be at the airport, and we could actually get some hot food and some cold food and feel like we were back in civilization. And I think we both slept all the way to Portland. I don't think we woke up for anything. Maybe we woke up for something, but pretty much slept, you know, however many hours that was. And then once we were in Portland, it was all kind of like phone stuff with the insurance company, and, you know, they had, you know, provided us some money to be able to live outside of our home, and they went and packed up the cars and shipped them, and yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy, but it was a great experience, you know, looking back on it. You know, the last couple of years, like probably the last 2 years, are the, like this year, the only reason I remembered it this year is because there were some headlines about it, you know, the 30th anniversary. And last year, I didn't even think about it until a couple days after. And, you know, it takes that long for you to, I mean, the first couple years, it was kind of like post-traumatic stress syndrome whenever that date was rolling around. And I don't mean like the horrible PTSD, but it was like a little anxiety, like just remembering what you went through, you know, a few, you know, a year ago and 2 years ago and 5 years ago. And I know 10 years ago. And pretty soon it started fading, and I was like, oh, that's good. I'm glad that that date doesn't make me think of all these memories again. You know, it's the, you know, the impact is fading from my life, which was cool. Yeah. You know, and I mean, fortunately, like, looking back on it now, we really didn't have to do anything spectacular to survive, right? Because we already were prepared to survive. You know, we always had some food in storage, and we always had food in, you know, storage that was going to last for years, you know, canned food. We always bought something extra that we weren't going to eat, and we put it in that, you know, we even bought stuff we didn't even like. Because, of course, you won't eat it if you don't like it. But if you have to survive, you'll eat it. And I actually think that's kind of a good plan, too, by the way. I'm going to tell you guys something. This kind of goes along that same line. I had that heart attack 1 week ago, like 9 days ago, and my diet has changed significantly. Had to, but I used to stock up on sardines. I would just buy sardines once in a while because, number one, they kind of last a long time, and they are a self-open can, not a self-open, but I mean, you don't need a can opener. You can just pop it open, and it's fish. I mean, an olive oil, so it's good for you. And when, after the heart attack, and I'm going over this, you know, heart healthy diet stuff, and, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to start eating more fish. And I happen to like sardines and tuna and salmon. You know, I like fish, so it's not a big deal. So I went to the cupboard and pulled out some cans of sardines that I've had for a while. And I was like, okay, I better check the use-by date on some of these. Well, some of the use-by dates were like 2010. Just to give you an idea of how long ago I bought some of these goods, which is not good. It's not good that I had sardines in my taken up space that were way beyond the use-by date. But I probably, if it was a survival situation, I probably would have popped them open and kind of checked them out and seen if, you know, they were still edible or not. But no, I tossed them. So I tossed them, but I still had plenty of cans that, you know, were within the use-by date. And yeah, so I've been eating sardines. I just think it's kind of tuna order. I just think it's kind of cool that, you know, that simple stuff that you can do along the way can make your reaction to a survival event much easier. Like, no panic, you know, no stress. Okay, it's stressful. It is stressful. No matter what, even if you don't identify stress, it's stressful. It's stressful having something taken away from you instantly, like your house, your bed, your clothing, your comfort, your air conditioning, like I said. It causes a little bit of stress. And sleeping outside, you know, in Miami, Kendall Ridge, even though your hurricane has passed, you kind of are still thinking some jackass is going to come, you know, start some trouble because, you know, they're opportunistic. And, you know, it's not comfortable outside, 80 degrees and 100% humidity. But less stressful being a little bit prepared for it. So I hope whenever I'm, you know, rambling about stuff that I think can help you survive these situations, I hope it's just even a tiny thing. Go buy yourself some sardines or a couple cans of tuna, you know, and set them aside, put them in the back. Because fresh food, you know, when there's no power, it's not going to last very long. It's pretty impossible to eat a refrigerator full of fresh food. I know some of you can probably do it. All right, what else? Oh, hey, I do want to share this with you. I'm going to put this link in the chat room because I'm not going to get into crazy conspiracies. I'm just going to tell you there's a website that has how to detox from the spike protein of COVID, and not only COVID, the disease, but the spike proteins that you get from the jab, which is such a joke. So I'm going to drop this in the chat room, and I will put it in the show notes. But anyway, this, I think, is a really good site. Worth looking into, kind of follow the instructions there. And there's actually a few others. I forget where I got this from. I mean, I got it from Epic Times, but it seems like there were six different pages here. Oh, yeah. No, on the left side of this link I put in there, there's a whole list of, I think, articles that you can kind of look at. But anyway, I think it's a place you can, you know, if you're concerned about having a spike protein in your body, no matter how it got there, they're telling you how to detox from it, how to destroy it. And it's not that hard. So, you know, until they have the monkeypox vaccine and make that mandatory, or the Lyme's disease vaccine, or God knows what else they're working on. I'm so shocked, honest to God. I have an entire page of notes that's only, it's dedicated to the vaccine injuries that are showing up now. Not only that, but what Pfizer and Moderna said before it was ever released, well, in secret memos in the company, they knew already that it sucked, that it wasn't going to work. This is what I have a problem with. Number one, why are they still pushing this jab? And I mean, now they brought out this new combo jab that's, you know, hang on, sorry, got a drink. Yeah, the combo jab that, you know, is the original jab juice, plus the Omicron variant addition that's going to make it so much better. And I just keep thinking to myself, how can you fail so horribly at making something that's supposed to make people better and still have people, you know, line up for this thing? Like they're anxiously waiting for the next booster to come out. You know, you know, some health authorities are still pumping the idea, you know, and get your kids out there and get them jabbed too. And yet you have people here, you know, so who was this? I forget who did this paper, but, you know, they're telling you how to detox yourself from this stupid spike protein. You know, and I'm not going to, I got to tell you, I've been kind of like rethinking this heart attack I had. I think I would fall into the category of this being a jab-induced heart attack, honest to God. And I'll tell you a few reasons why. I wasn't really going to get into this. I'll make it brief. So a year in February of last year, I had a little kind of a almost loss of consciousness. I felt like a really weird feeling, like you know, I couldn't really put myself together, and I ended up going to the hospital and getting checked out. And they're like, okay, you know, we're going to do some follow ups. And so a month later, I had an echocardiogram, I had my carotids checked, and I had my brain scan. That was 15 months ago. All of those things turned out perfectly fine. An echocardiogram 1 year ago. Right? My carotids, ultrasound, clear as a whistle. I even saw some imaging from the echo, and I asked the doc, I was like, hey, I go, what's my, oh no, this was when I had diverticulitis, which was a little over a year and a half ago, and they imaged my gut, and I said, hey, how's my aorta look, by the way, abdominal aorta? And he goes, look, it's a freaking wide open pipe. He said, you don't see that. He says, you have the aorta of a 30-year-old kid. I was like, oh, okay. So now think about this. In 2 years, supposedly I would have built up so much cholesterol, you know, plaque in my arteries or whatever to cause this blood clot to form on my heart. I'm having a hard time buying it. I'm really, because I had a follow up with my primary care yesterday, and he said, yeah, he said, you just finished your physical. He said, we did it in February, and he said everything was fine. And I know everything was fine because, number one, I've never been on cholesterol meds, never been on high blood pressure meds, never been on heart meds, or, you know, I do take a aspirin every day. But my point is, you know, usually these kind of things take some years to kind of build up that kind of cholesterol, you know, where your arteries are getting slowly closed and slowly closed. No, this was instantaneous heart attack, you know, with documented proof that I was clear a year ago, 15 months ago. There was nothing. So I don't know, I may fall into that category, you know, at least I'm going to put myself there for now, that, you know, probably a Vax-caused heart attack, in my opinion. I'm sure there's no way to document that. I'm just glad that I'm alive and that I feel fine. I will tell you, you know, the couple of things that are slowing, I mean, mainly just being slowed down, period. I don't have a ton of stamina, but I have to go through this cardiac rehab, you know, and get everything back up. I've lost like 15 pounds since I said I was going to start losing weight. So, and now I think it's probably going to go even faster because I'm not going to be eating any of the stuff that I would eat to make me put on weight. And, yeah. All right, we'll just do a couple more things I want to get off my plate here. The student loans. Aren't you glad that student loan forgiveness is coming? Aren't you glad that we're going to pay for these people who couldn't figure out a way to actually get a degree to make some money? You know, so they're stuck with the student loan and, you know, the government's going to go bail them out. That's fantastic. Like, what we need to do is spend a few bajillion more dollars. And essentially, it's just to buy votes. That's it. It's just to buy votes. And it's just the beginning, the opening. You know, hey, we're going to pay $10,000 of your student loan debt. And I've heard a couple iterations of how this is going to work, and none of them work for me. But at first I was heard that they were going to, you know, pay everybody who has been paying their loans and has been in public service, because public servants don't make as much money as the private sector. You know why? Because you suck enough that you can't get a job in the private sector. And don't tell me any other, you know, story. There's very few people who truly give enough of a crap that they're going to take lower pay to help people, you know, in a public service. Mostly it's because you're unemployable in the private sector. Kind of what I've been saying all along about all these people. I mean, especially right now, when you look at the people who are in charge of, you know, the CDC and the, I don't know, the Surgeon General, all these people, they're flakes. They are flakes. Yeah, they couldn't possibly work in the private sector. Number one, nobody would hire them because they're freaks. And yeah, I know, you can't discriminate against somebody because they're a freak. Well, guess what? I'm sure it happens. You know, I'm sure when you show up with your whatever, you know, they're just going to look at you and, like, ask you about all your experience and then tell you how many more people they have who are way more experienced than you. And it's kind of true. You know, so unless you are truly outstanding in your field, I mean, you know, You take your chances when you start looking like a freak. That's what I'm saying. You know, I always hear people, oh, I just want to express myself. And I'm like, okay, well, I hope you enjoy being poor because, you know. Yep. That's funny. Yeah, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat. And I went in to ask them why. No, that's enough of that. All right. Yeah. What was I saying about the people who couldn't? Oh, yeah. So they're gonna pay public servants more because they're public servants. Which is kind of funny. So if you think about it. So you went to school, studied some stupid whatever, you know, degree. And then you went and took a job as a public servant because you probably couldn't get a job with your degree basically anywhere else. And luckily, you might have got a job in your degree field under the guise of being a public servant. So they're going to pay those people more. It's kind of like, you know, patting you on the back for sucking so much you had to go work for the government. Oh, yeah, and I mean, I can't imagine why people aren't just throwing a frickin' fit right about now. So let's say you didn't go to college. Why? How about the government just give you $10,000 because you went from high school into straight into whatever job it is you wanted to do, and you've been working your whole life. No. Your work is going to pay for these losers who studied some subject that they thought was, you know, esoteric and couldn't get a job. You're going to pay their debt. That's right. Your taxes are going in, and the checks being written to the college graduates that can't pay their debt. My God, man. This is a crazy time. What is it now? August? Holy hell, we're almost out of August. Wow, September, October, and oh my God. Oh my God. The next few months are going to be insane. I really think they're going to be insane. I gotta see where I am time-wise because I played a little music, you know, in the beginning. Oh no, we're right about there. Well, hell yeah. Let's do this. Hey, thanks everybody for joining me. I'll catch you here live Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, and you can always catch shows on the podcast, download, whatever. Anyway, thanks you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until